podcast this week, we expose Randall Park's shortcomings and find there to be none, because he is awesome and also the writer-director of the new film, Shortcomings. Plus, the usual news and nonsense on the movie podcast that doesn't know whether to be flattered or terrified by the news that one of our lovely, loyal listeners has launched our very own Empire Podcast subreddit. Probably terrified.
Wait, what? Yeah.
Yes. Hello, Pod. I'm Chris Hewitt. Welcome to the Empire Podcast. This week we're in the studio, and I'm joined by two colleagues of such lethal cunning. James Dyer is here, our great big fucking nerd who knew all about the Empire Podcast subreddit. Hello, James.
Hello. I've even jumped on there.
I know, I've seen this. Mm. It's maybe the only time I ever visit it, because I will almost certainly be called a twat at some point.
Well, I've already done that.
So. Retreat into a dark hole of despair for 3 or 4 days.
That's why I went on there, because you said that I could go on there and call you a twat.
I did say that. In fairness, I gave you permission.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're also joined by our geek queen, Helen O'Hara, who did not know about the Empire Podcast subreddit.
I did not. There was a sort of slightly confusing mention earlier.
AMA,
in our...
Helen, ask me anything about the subreddit.
No, but there was a slightly confusing message in our chat earlier going, that subreddit isn't so bad. And I'm like, what? What subreddit? And no one answered me. And now this is, I guess, the explanation.
Yeah, this is it.
Okay, so I don't think I want to know either.
I'm terrified.
I live in darkness.
But also vaguely aroused. Is that wrong?
That's what Reddit's for.
This is what Reddit's for. I don't Reddit. I don't do Reddit.
I lurk. I don't really post.
I bet you're
I'm very much a Reddit lurker.
You sound like a lurker.
I'm on Reddit quite a lot, but mainly lurking, not really posting.
I have a lot of people I love who send me Reddit links. I read those, and that's it.
Yeah, because like slash relationships is a
What's
funny
that?
One.
Relationships with Slash, the guitarist from Guns N' Roses.
Indeed, yes, he gets around. And also Am I the Arsehole
allegedly.
Subreddit.
Am I the Arsehole? Yeah, Am I the Arsehole is amazing. Even if those are invented, those are some extraordinary
stories. Is that a crossover
stories.
With Slash relationships?
Very much so.
One about the woman whose mother-in-law was trying to poison her was amazing. She thought her husband was trying to poison her, but it turned out it was her mother-in-law.
Wow.
And if somebody hasn't optioned that for a film, I really don't know what we're doing as a society.
If you, Hollywood, if you're listening, the one to option is the one about the Iranian yogurt. If you've not looked for, just Google, the Iranian yogurt is not the issue here, and you will get the thread. It's extraordinary. Someone has even done graphics and a title for it. It's possibly the greatest story of our time.
Is this related to Jack Reacher in any way?
No, he had never eaten a yogurt.
No.
He had seen them, though.
Although my Reddit handle is Reacher Said Nothing.
Yes, I did see that.
Yeah.
I think I have a Reddit account, but I don't know. We should do an AMA. We should do an Empire Podcast AMA. And when the five people who turn up at that are bored,
ambitious.
We just go.
Yeah.
So there's so it's r/ Empire Podcast. It was set up by someone who shall remain nameless. They slid into my DMs yesterday. He said, look, I've done this thing. Could you give it a shout out? At the moment, it's got 119 members. We can get that up with this plug on the podcast. We can get that up to 130, 140, I'm sure. Also, before we get into this week's listener question, I hope you're both well. I'm not.
Yeah, no, it's not. You're a bit under the weather, aren't you?
You're taking your life in your hands. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but delighted to be here in a small enclosed room with you.
Well, I've just been to the doctor, and the doctor says that it's... That is totally fine. With the application of just medicine, I should
Yes, apply the cream liberally.
Yes.
And the rash will hopefully...
It rubs the lotion on his skin.
Or else it gets the hose again.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm not feeling too well, so if I die during this, James or Helen...
You're not feeling all too well. Is that what you're saying, Chris?
Is this a Taylor Swift?
It is a Taylor Swift reference, which of course is pertinent to something we will be discussing
a
little bit later
on. I knew you were trouble when you walked in.
Hey! Shake it off, Helen.
Those were also...
No, I get it. I get it.
Chris is hip. He's down with the kids.
Am I?
Is he?
I'm not so sure. I've spent the week rediscovering the Flaming Lips.
And is that why you went to the doctor?
Yes. All right. I was going to say something else, which is that we are doing another live show, folks.
Ooh,
this is exciting. We're doing a live show. And just for you people who live outside London, who always... or quite rightly, accuse us of London bias with our live shows and whatnot, you will be delighted to know that this is not going to be in London. It is going to be in a place beginning with L, not Liverpool, not Llanelli, not Llandudno, not Loughborough.
Why not?
Not Leicester. It is going to be in the glorious town of Leeds. Leeds. And we're going to go up there on November 9th, Thursday, November 9th. And we're going to be there as part of a Journalism and Media Week. That's what it's called. It's called Journalism and Media Week. But don't worry, the show is open to everybody, not just journalists, media types,
and weeks.
Journalism and media students who are going to be part of the audience. But we have a number of tickets that are going on sale. They may be on sale by the time you listen to this. If not, they're going to go on sale on Monday, which is October the 16th.
Sure.
Thanks, James. And and they're going to be just £10 a ticket. Just £10 a ticket. Can't say fairer than that. So I will now say this for the benefit of the people who live in Yorkshire. Get on phone.
Oh, God.
Walk down road.
Down Ginnell.
Down Mill. Pick up debit card. Get on internet.
Oh, God.
Wow. It's just
Biley,
amazing.
Two tickets.
It's great that you're giving them time to organise the pitchforks and the mob to meet you off the train. That is fantastic.
There you go.
But at the end of Quantum Leap, Dr. Chris Hewitt never returned home.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy, indeed. Where in Leeds are we going to be doing this event?
Ah, James, that's a really good question.
Isn't it?
It's a very, very good question. We're going to be doing it in the town of Leeds.
Yeah, yes.
City, actually, isn't it? It's a city.
It feels like it is a city,
It should be a city. It's got a big football team.
Yes.
And it's got, obviously, Headingley, probably a rugby ground.
Are we doing the show at any of these places?
No.
Right.
We're doing it somewhere else.
Okay.
Do I know where it is? No.
Is it?
But if you go to...
Yes.
The website...
Okay. Do you know the address?
No.
Okay.
let me just look it up.
The thing about us at the Empire Podcast is we are nothing if not prepared and organised.
Ah! We're doing it Leeds Trinity.
Yes.
Where is that?
Leeds Trinity University. I have been there. I did a talk there once.
It's Leeds Trinity University Auditorium, under 18s, accompanied by an adult, says here. Oh, not under 15s. I think our shows are okay, but don't bring kids.
There are some swears, usually.
There are usually some swears and some gratuitous nudity. Right, so you go to store.leedstrinity@ac.uk.
That's catchy.
store.leedstrinity.ac.uk.
We will also tweet this out on the Empire account.
We will, and our individual accounts.
Yeah, so we will let you know where to find
us. All right, okay. Shall we get on with the show, please?
God,
please, God.
Yes. All right, okay. So last week we had a question, which is
as
good.
Is our want. Yes.
We had a question, and it was a good question, and it elicited many chuckles. And the question was, can you name all the Bond films chronologically?
Oh, yes. God.
And can you get
the
a bonus point if you name the song?
Yeah.
Right, so... A number of people this week wrote in asking for us to name all the Carry On movies in order.
And who wrote the theme tunes?
Well, actually, someone wrote in and said, can you name the Carry On films in order? No. And can you name the alternate titles given for each movie
Absolutely
in the credit
not.
Sequences? Also a no.
No.
What?
But I thought, okay, so there's two questions. I'm going to give them to you, and you can choose which one you want to do, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we can either, because I know you're not going to be able to do that, but I thought it might be
Definitely
quite fun
not.
Seeing how many Carry On films.
Just like how many in general.
How many in general.
Okay.
We don't have to get them in order, but how many in general
we can do. probably half, right?
You think we could do half?
I think we can make it half. Maybe even a bit
more than half.
Okay.
All right. Or... Another question, this came from someone whose name I cannot remember. It is, obviously we can name all the Marvel movies in order, all the MCU movies in order, but can you name all the Stan Lee cameos in those movies? So we can either do that, or we could do the Carry-Ons.
Let's try and just name Carry-Ons, because it takes the order issue.
Okay, should we do it as like a mallet smack thing? Each one of us just picks one until we all run out.
Now, do you want me...
Like Path to Parcel.
To call up a list of Carry On movies.
I want us to do all three of us organically. I'll start camping.
Okay.
Straight up to the Khyber.
I beg your pardon.
Steady.
That's what leads to the Flaming Lips.
Yeah.
Let me see. Well, should we explain what Carry On movies are? first of all.
Do we need to?
I think we do.
I think we do,
because we have
yeah.
many international listeners.
Okay.
And also listeners who might just have avoided them. And also younger people yeah. may not have been subjected to them every single weekend on every single TV channel.
Under, I'd say, 30 who yeah. may not know what the Carry On films are. So what are the Carry On films? Your understanding, please, Helen.
They are a series of British comedy movies made from the, 50s to the sort mm-hmm. of 70s, roughly.
Yep.
There was an outlier, but we're not going to talk about that too much, I think.
Well, we should mention it.
We'll mention it, of course. It. Carry On Columbus.
Oh.
Hey.
Bing.
But they basically were united by more by an ensemble than any kind of traditional continuing storyline. So you would yes. get the same actors and actresses, more or less. There was a sort of core ensemble who you know, came and went, but mostly
yes.
were there.
Featuring who, James, do you know who those people might be? Can you name some
Sid
of the
James,
core
Kenneth
carrying?
Williams. Yep. Those are the two, I would say, principals. But obviously, Barbara Windsor was in a bunch of them.
Barbara Windsor. Hattie Jakes.
Hattie yes. Jakes, yeah. I
can't remember the names of anyone else.
Okay. He's struggling. Hellspells.
I was about to add Hattie Jakes, so I've
okay.
forgotten the rest.
So then you have the likes of Charlie Hawtrey, you have Kenneth Connor, you have Jim Dale, you have
Jim Dale,
Jim Dale, of course. You know, you have Bernard Breslau, you have the guy who goes, hey, hey, whose name I can't remember. You got Peter Butterworth. You got lots of other people.
Yes.
Many
wonderful people.
Now, I believe there yes. are 31 of these movies.
Oh, I don't know about... Okay, yeah. That's going to be a challenge then. But yes, so they started off being kind of fairly rooted in British life, I feel like, you know, with things like buses and doctors and nurses and stuff like that.
Right.
And as the time went on, the successes kept rolling in, the budgets got a bit bigger, then they started tackling sort of historical and genre stuff. So you've got Carry On Screaming, ding,
ding.
Which is a horror movie pastiche, and you got Carry On Cleopatra, which was obviously
Just Carry On Cleo,
which is a you know, Roman sword and sandal.
And actually,
nonsense.
Because these things were famously, I mean, they weren't very expensive. They would reuse sets that were scattered around. And my understanding is that Carry On Cleo actually used sets that had been left by Cleopatra. So that's just why.
Weren't they all
looks,
in Italy?
No, apparently there were some in England.
Oh,
well.
Yes, that's right. They did do some shooting in England because of her back.
Being Elizabeth.
Elizabeth Taylor in that case. Yeah, yes.
I was Elizabeth Windsor. That would be completely different than Cleopatra.
Definitely very different. But yeah, so they have a certain charm, and they are a very talented group of comic actors. By the standards of today, they're perhaps a little, shall we say, old-fashioned.
They had a bawdiness to them, didn't they?
They were not PC.
No.
They trafficked in innuendo, which we do not do on the Empire podcast.
Crucially, they pushed it out, pushed the boat out steady. They pushed the boat out about as far as you could, given the restrictions at the time, I would say.
Yes.
I mean, if they were making them now, it would be... I mean, I hate to think what it would be, but...
Well, they've been trying to make one for a long, long time. I've lost count of the number of times that Carry On London has been announced, usually with Shane Ritchie attached, like a limpet that you cannot just fucking shake off. But it's been announced a lot. So they think the last one was towards the end of the 70s, and they became...
The last proper one.
So we're not counting Columbus, is it?
No,
what
we
saying?
Are counting Columbus. And then it was a big gap, and then it came back in, 1992, thereabouts... And it had like the cream of the crop of British comedy all queuing up to be in Carry On Columbus, which is, quite frankly, one of the worst films ever made.
It's not good.
It's not good. And that kind of killed the franchise dead. And they've been trying to revive it for a long, long, long time. But they haven't been able to do it. But yes, yeah, the quality is variable, but there are some absolute belters in there. And... all right, so let's give it a proper start. You said, I'll write these down.
I don't remember what I said originally. I think, did I say...
Up the Khyber.
He had said...
Camping up the Khyber.
Yeah.
Wow.
I also mentioned, because I cheated a bit, Columbus.
Yes.
Cleo.
Yes.
Screaming.
Which is
the horror.
In my opinion, the best one.
I go back and forth between that and Khyber and Cleopatra, both of which I
Khyber
also
is
very much
good.
Like. Yeah.
Carry On Cleo, of course, has the cracking Kenneth Williams line, infamy.
They've all got infamy.
Which is
amazing line.
Very, very good. Jimbo, your turn.
Khyber has that great dinner party scene,
which is very good. And is that the one with Roy Castle?
Yeah.
Roy Castle's in that one as well.
Dick.
Should we explain who Roy Castle is now?
I don't think we need to explain who Roy Castle is. Norris McWhirter was not available. Dick.
Do you know who judges the porn version of the Guinness Book of World Records? Norris McSquirter.
Is this your joke that you've just made up?
No. I've had that in my back pocket for some time.
I bet you have.
Next to the flaming lips. All right, Jim, but what were you saying?
Dick.
Dick. Carry on, Dick. That's right. Sorry, I thought you were just on the subreddit.
That's it. Hey, look what I found. No, yes, Carry On, Dick.
Carry On, Dick, which is about Dick Turpin.
Yes.
All right, Hellspell.
Stand and deliver the dick.
Wasn't there a Carry On Doctor?
There was a Carry On Doctor.
Wasn't there Carry On Again Doctor?
Correct.
Oh. Yeah. Wow. Can't get enough of that.
Cooking my gas now.
Just because Kenneth Williams became air matron.
Do you want to continue this medical
thing? As Kenneth Williams.
Yes.
Nurse? Is that one? Carry On nursing. Yes. Or is it nurse or nursing?
No, nurse.
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 Okay.
Nurse.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, good. All right. Hell's Bells, we're back to you.
There's something about buses. I feel like there is a bus one, isn't there?
I don't know. Is there a bus one?
Maybe not.
No, are you thinking of On the Buses?
I might be thinking of On the Buses, but I feel like there might be a bus one as well. However, there is one about Henry VIII, and I've just been trying to remember his name. Is it literally Carry On Henry?
No.
Carry On Tudor? Carry On Beheading?
In the ballpark.
Carry On Henry?
I don't think there's a Carry On Henry. I think the one I'm thinking of is about Henry VIII. It stars Sid James as Henry VIII.
Yes, it does.
And it's actually got one of the most elaborate titles, and they carry on. Ugh.
Oh no. Carry On. Yeah, sorry, I've got none.
Carry On, Don't Lose Your Head.
Carry On, Don't Lose, which is a terrible title.
Well, it's not the, they've got
it's like Strictly Come Dancing, which took two titles that made sense.
Yeah.
And put them together.
Yeah, it's like
so
Strictly
they make
Ballroom
no sense.
Or Come Dancing. You can't Strictly Come. It doesn't make any sense at all.
That's why everybody calls it Strictly.
Wasn't there another one? Follow That Camel? Carry On, Follow That Camel.
There was. Oh. Starring?
Yeah, again, which doesn't make any sense. A camel, presumably, and they followed it.
Phil Silvers.
Was he the camel?
Oh.
Yes, he was.
One hump or two?
We gave him the hump. I don't know, you made the same joke. Carry On, Follow the Camel. All right. We're up to 1, 2, 3.
In fact,
4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. We're doing well.
Did we do? Because obviously we did the Ear Matron thing, but did we do Carry On Matron?
Carry On Matron.
Carry On Matron.
Carry
On
Matron.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to write that down and see if that's right. Carry On Matron. It sounds right.
I think it's right.
Instinctively, it feels right.
I used to know this shit, but now some of it's.
It's been a very long time.
And they're not on TV the way they used to be.
Is there an army one? I feel like there must be an army one, like Carry On Private or Carry On.
Well, that's interesting, Helen. Because the very first one, starring Bob Monkhouse and William Hartnell, is
Carry On Up the
Up
Army?
The Private.
Carry On Up, up the
carry
Privates.
On, carry On Up, carry on carry up, on up the Privates. Yes.
Carry Carry On.
Saluting.
Don't Lose Your Helmet. Carry On. We started off with Private, so let's go up.
Sergeant.
Yes, Carry
Yay!
On Sergeant.
Oh, I see.
Carry On Sergeant. Okay, that's a good one.
Which one is the one that has the I tried it once but didn't like it gag in it?
I don't know.
No. Do you remember this one?
No.
When Sid James is going to, do a drink? I tried it once but didn't like it. You smoke? I tried it once but didn't like it. Any kids? Don't tell me. Only one.
It's a good joke.
It's a good joke.
Did you say Carry On Camping, the very first one? Because that's the one where Barbara Windsor's bra flies off.
It is. It literally flies off.
Yeah.
I don't think that's how bras work, but
I
sure.
With a boing.
Boing. Yeah. Boing.
Yeah.
Because it simply could not contain what was within.
That's right.
Yes.
True. Babs Unleashed.
Babs Unleashed. Yes, indeed. That Elka Summer is in that one as well, if I'm right in thinking.
There you go.
Yeah. I know what you did last summer. Who's next? Hell's Bells come up, Sergeant Jimbo.
Oh, I think I'm.
Don't tell me you're exhausted right. already. Depleted.
Emmanuel, which is not good.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I had successfully forgotten that one existed.
Which was the last one before Columbus.
Yeah, understandably so. Because you can have innuendo and bawdiness, but when you're just parodying porn, I'm not sure that really works.
Yeah, that was very tawdry. They don't like to talk about it.
I'm really stuck now.
This is good audio content.
Isn't it? Did we do Cabby?
Was there a Carry On Cabby? Caesar as well
Cabby.
As a...
There was a Cabby.
Oh, the Cabby.
There was Cabby. Was there Caesar?
No,
that's what I was asking.
In
He's in Cleo. I mean, not...
I
well,
he
I
was.
Mean, also.
I mean, canonically.
I mean, historically.
Don't forget the subreddit. Am I the asshole?
What?
Am I the asshole?
Asp, asp, oh, asp.
Yes.
I thought you said ass. Asp.
I killed myself with an asp because it's a symbol of the royal house of my family.
Am I the asp?
Am I the asp?
Which is not to be confused with Michael Aspel.
I'm very confused.
No, he didn't have an ass pole. This is good.
It is.
Audio
isn't
content.
It great? Have we? I don't know. I can't think of any others. I know there are more, but I cannot think of them.
All right, you've done lamentably.
Yeah.
Lamentably.
Well.
Ooh.
No, don't look it up. Don't you fucking Google it, Mr. Googler, Captain Googlers. No, you can't. Well, say it. Go on then.
England. On, then. For yes. England, James.
For England. England.
There was a Carry On England.
Okay. All right. Shall we have the official? Here we go. The official list of Carry On movies is. Carry On Sergeant in 1958 was followed very swiftly by Carry On Nurse. Then you didn't think remotely hard enough about professions. Carry On Teacher.
Yeah.
Carry On Constable. Carry On Regardless.
Don't know what that was.
I don't know what that one is myself. It's revolves around a job agency called Helping Hands, run by Sid James's character Bert Handy. Who presumably has a drinking problem and loves a handy shandy. Carry On Cruising.
Oh,
Carry On Cabbie.
Would not have guessed that.
Carry On Jack.
I mean, what
is that? Jack the Ripper? Is that
no,
Jack the
no, so this was a pirate one, I think.
Okay, that would be, yeah. Carry On Spine and Carry On Cleo. Those three all came out in the same year, if you thought they were shitting them out. If you think Marvel are shitting them out. At least they have different directors and
the
writers.
Carry On cinematic universe was strong.
Oh, my God.
They have different directors and writers sometimes on the same film.
Whoa! Carry On Cowboy. We'll get on to that. Carry On Cowboy. Carry On Screaming, 1966. Carry On Don't Lose Your Head, 1967. Carry On Follow That Camel.
You missed
and
out, Doctor.
Carry On Doctor, all in the same year as well, 1967. 1968, they took the year off and made just one film, Carry On Up the Khyber. 69.
Oh, well, what a film.
Nice. Saw Carry On Camping and Carry On Again, Doctor. 1970, saw Carry On Up the Jungle and Carry On Loving. Then Carry On Henry, correct, Helen?
Yay.
You are absolutely right.
Sid James is Henry VIII.
Yes, indeed. So what's Carry On Don't Lose Your Head? Oh, and who cares? Carry On At Your Convenience. This is good audio
at
content.
At Your Convenience.
Carry On Round the Bend is the alternate title for that.
Carry
Have
On
you ever,
At Your Convenience.
Ever felt like this?
Carry On At Your Convenience stars Kenneth Williams. It's about a toilet company. And Sid James, who usually played a character called Sid, plays Sid Plummer. Good, right? Good toilet guy. Kenneth Williams plays a character called W.C. Boggs. This is 70s, it was a different time. Carry On Matron, Carry On Abroad, Carry On Girls, whoa, followed swiftly by Carry On Dick.
Bet it was.
Then Carry On Behind.
Steady. That's quite the triple threat. Carry On Girls, Carry On Dick, and Carry On Behind.
Then it was followed by Carry On Flaming Lips in 1976.
Oh, no.
Carry On England, then a film simply called Let's Carry On.
That feels like an anthology film, doesn't it?
It must
that's
be,
a,
yeah.
The
that's
very best
package.
Of Carry On.
Yeah.
And then Carry On Emmanuel.
Which destroyed the entire saga.
It did. Although it was teetering on the brink.
Yeah,
it must have been
wobbling. Begging for death at that point, yeah. Anyway.
It was Carry On, Kill Me, Kill Me, Kill Me.
Carry On, Kill Me.
1992, Carry On Columbus.
Yeah.
And then we have been bereft. We have been Carry
Columbus,
On
though,
this.
Obviously had like Rick Mayall in it, didn't it?
Did.
Like had different
yeah.
people. Who did it have? Bernard Cribbins, Maureen Lipman, Julian
yep.
Clary, Alexei
yep.
Sale. That was a bit of a... a
it
bit
was
of
a who's who.
It was, yeah.
Mm. Of the British Columbus.
And then when we saw it, it was a wise why.
Absolutely lamentable.
How,
film.
How?
A lamentable film. Anyway, check them out. Check some of them out.
Check some
don't,
of them.
Don't they haven't aged well.
Check some of them out. Check out Carry On Screaming in particular.
Yes.
Frying Tonight. It's a good film.
Is it though?
And Bob Monkhouse is in the first one. You can't argue with that. Bob Monkhouse.
Funny guy.
I like him. That's why I'm going to kill him last.
Okay.
All right.
If you want to have your question read out in the Empire podcast,
God
maybe,
help
give it a,
you.
Maybe give it a week because we'll probably do the MCU next week, right?
Oh, what?
Yeah. Come on, you could do it. It's only 32 films?
Mm-hmm.
33?
I thought we were doing Stanley cameos.
We'll do Stanley cameos, but no Googling. No researching. You got to go in pure. Like the driven snow.
Mm-hmm.
All right. If you want to have your question read out on the Emperor podcast, I'm on Twitter until I'm not. So at Chris Hewitt is the name. You can slide into my DMs. You can wait for a panicked shout out every now and again, or you can reply to any of my tweets once you've stopped laughing, of course. Time to kick off the movie news section. And we're going to start, usually we leave obituaries until the end, but we're going to start this week with the very, very sad news that we lost the great English director, Terence Davies, who passed away this week after a short illness at the age of just 77. And just a year or so after his last movie came out as well.
Yeah, Benediction, which was a beautiful story about Siegfried Sassoon. And yeah, he was, you know, generally considered one of the very best that the country has produced in the last, 30, 40 years. Particularly known for Distant Voices, Still Lives, The Long Day Closes, The Deep Blue Sea, which is an extraordinary film, probably my favorite of these, The House of Mirth, Neon Bible, mm-hmm. A Quiet Passion, you name it. Not the most prolific filmmaker in the world, not because he didn't have the ideas ready to go, but because he generally didn't have the money ready to go to produce them. He always had to kind of struggle to convince financiers to get behind him. But just a beautiful, very human level filmmaker. And a Liverpudlian, Chris.
Yes, indeed. And Liverpool was very, very close to his heart and very, very close to some of his, you know, his best movies as well. And he was, I think it's fair to say, a bit of a poet on the big screen. I never had the chance to interview him, but I think we spoke to him for Benediction for the magazine last year. Ian Freer spoke to him and said it was a fascinating interview because he was, you know, by turns really insightful about his career, but also a little bit sad about the movies that hadn't got made or the opportunities that maybe had passed him by. But yeah, I believe he was still full of film and figure and hoping to get many, many more movies made. And it's very, very sad indeed. Distant Voices, Still Lives, I would say, is his best movie. So go and check it out if you fancy that. You could do a lot worse than sitting and watching a couple of his greatest hits, so to speak. But it's very, very, very sad news indeed. And a huge loss for the British film industry. Terence Davies, who passed away this week at the age of just 77. And while we're talking about movie news as well, there hasn't been a lot yet because, well, there's some stuff's been announced, which is good. Some projects are beginning to get off the ground now that the writer's strike is over. However, the SAG after strike is still very much on. And there were talks yesterday between SAG AFTRA and sadly, those talks did not pave the way for the climax. Sorry, I'm in full carry-on mode. That we all sought. And so the actors are still on strike. You'd think this would be easy. Just give them what they want. But no.
Pay their wages, you motherfuckers.
You absolute motherfuckers.
Sorry.
Carry on, you absolute motherfuckers. yes.
So carry on striking.
Carry on striking.
One.
Yeah. They're not doing it. No sign of resolution yet, which surprises me because it's been about 2 weeks now since the writer's strike was over. And I thought that the actors would follow very, very swiftly. Mm. Not Taylor swiftly, but just swiftly.
Mm. I mean, also Taylor swiftly.
Yeah.
She's probably the leader everyone needs right now.
They are depriving us. They're depriving James, principally, of movies starring Taylor Swift.
That's true. She could once again be playing a cat.
Well, she's writing and directing her own film, which presumably is now on hold because she's doing everything else in the world, but also because, you know, strikes.
So all I'm saying is, you're making a powerful enemy of James Dyer.
It's true.
Mm-hmm.
This man will lobby you. He will lobby you intensively. You think Andy Dufresne and Shawshank is bad when it comes to lobbying? From now on, he's going to write 3 letters a week.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, give me my Taylor Swift. That's what he's going to say.
We also had a trailer for The Iron Claw, which sounds like...
Is it a sequel to The Iron Giant?
You would think, or like a sequel to that very bad Jackie Chan, Arnold Schwarzenegger crossover movie. But it's not. It's a very thoughtful indie drama about a family. It's kind of, I don't know how much to tell you about the real life story of the Von Erich brothers, but you can find out.
Oh, Kerry Von Erich, the Texas Tornado.
Yeah.
No, it genuinely is.
No, genuinely,
it
yes.
genuinely is.
And his brothers, Dave and Mike.
Yes.
And Dozy, Biggie, Big, and Vintage.
Who all wrestle together under the auspices of their dad, Fritz.
I was a big fan of the Texas Tornado back in the day.
Yeah.
He teamed up with the Ultimate Warrior at Survivor Series in the 80s. Or it might have been the early 90s. I forget.
Sure. Look, don't let James put you off, okay? This is...
I'm just glad that James is engaged in something on the podcast. This is good. This is so rare. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi.
James Dyer.
Yeah. How it's Taylor Swift and wrestling. I mean, I'm here for this.
And if you could put those two together...
Oh, wow. Steady.
Steady now.
Okay, so this is directed by Sean Durkin of Martha, Marcy, May, Marlene fame. I just like that.
Well done that you were able to say
that,
right? So quickly and fluently.
Did you get it right?
She did.
Yeah, I did. Martha, Marcy, May, Marlene.
Oh, that's very good.
Anyway, it stars Zac Efron, Jeremy Allen White, Harris Dickinson, As three of the brothers. Lily James is, I think, Efron's character's love interest. So he's Kevin.
Yes.
And she's his love interest. And Fritz is played by Holt McCallany. And it's an A24 production, and it looks fan-frickin-tastic. Again,
fan-frickin-tastic.
If you want to know why this is an exciting and an interesting story beyond nerds like James who are really into wrestling, then you can go to Wikipedia and it is all very much there. If you
don't
want to know,
it will
don't
ruin it.
Don't well, ask about it.
I would actually say don't see the trailer because it'll ruin it.
There's a bit of a giveaway in the trailer, but not the full story of
right.
the film.
Can either of you tell me what the Texas Tornado's signature move was?
Was it the Iron Claw, James, the name
was
of the film?
Was it being followed by Bill Paxton and Helen Hunt?
It was the Iron Claw.
Yeah, it's all literally right. called the Iron Claw. Like, that was very much what I...
Although when he first did it, they just called it the Claw Hold. I don't think it called... Okay. I think the Iron Claw thing came later on. He also used to do this sort of this roundhouse punch, which made him look a bit like a tornado.
I see. Yeah. Hence the name.
Yeah.
So that's out in the States
the
on
name.
The 22nd of
he was
December.
Okay.
No word on the UK release that I know of, but
I'm
it,
sure
it'll be here pretty soon after.
Around the same time. Looks good. Looks good. I regret watching it. The trailer.
Well, honestly, it doesn't give away the whole story, as
I sure?
understand it. Yeah, I'm pretty
okay.
sure. So the other thing I would say is there was other A24 news this
yes.
week, which was perhaps less heartening.
Now, this is this a rumor or is this actual story?
That's a good question. I saw it reported as a thing that is happening, but maybe
okay.
it's not sort of finalized yet.
Okay.
But this was the story that A24 is looking for essentially VC funding kind of thing to get bigger, for one.
Stronger,
to get make
fitter, happier, more productive.
To make bigger movies and to bigger, make more happier. Commercial IP-based films.
Yes.
So they want to apparently...
They want to IP freely.
They want to IP freely. Rumor is they're chasing the rights to the Halloween franchise, for example.
How fast can rights to the Halloween franchise run?
I don't know. I mean, you never see Michael Myers running.
You don't.
But he does get around.
You do see him dancing in the nude an awful lot. No way, that's Mike Myers. I'm always getting those two mixed up. Now, we should say, of course, we're assuming a lot of knowledge. We assume that people know what A24 is. A24 is an independent company in the States. It makes loads of really, really cool movies, some of which now and again do well at the box office, but more often than not, they do okay at the box office. But they do well in award season.
Yeah.
Like?
Well, Everything Everywhere All at Once is,
boom.
Of course, the big, big, big success story.
Biggie, biggie, biggie.
But they did lose money on the likes of The Green Knight and Beau Is Afraid, which were fascinating films that I think we as film fans are really glad were made. But let's be honest, we're never probably going to be big, big hits. Dream Scenario is their next one. That's the Nicolas Cage appearing in Everybody's Dreams film. This is, I think everybody's gotten a bit worried about this. So apparently they are close to a $225 million equity investment to fund all of this. But it does seem to come with this idea that they will expand into existing IP, existing properties. They will join the endless remake, requel, sequel, reboot train at least part of the time. And maybe there's something to be said for that. Maybe there's something to be said for a one for them, one for us kind of a model.
Well, there's something to be said for not going out of business.
There is, absolutely. But at the same time, it's worrying if that's the only way to make money in Hollywood now or
it's
in filmmaking.
It's weird that they're coming off their biggest hit. But then again, how much of that money actually gets back to them? Were there other studio partners? Were there other financiers who didn't get their cut as well of Everything Everywhere All at Once? But just to throw you on some A24 titles, Ex Machina, Moonlight, Hereditary, Lady Bird, The Witch, Uncut Gems, The Lighthouse, Midsommar, Green Room, Everything Everywhere All at Once, Under the Skin, Room, The Farewell, Spring Breakers, Meanery, It Comes at Night, The Lobster, The Florida Project, Good Time, Eighth Grade, Enemy, First Reformed, The Spectacular Now, and Swiss Army Man are just the ones that I just saw there right now. And, you know, great, great films, a lot of them. But, you know, they didn't exactly set the box office alight in many, many cases. So I think this could be a good thing because it could allow A24 to carry on, as you say, do the one for them, one for me kind of thing. I presume A24 is like Kevin Feige, a giant sentient computer that greenlights all this stuff.
I believe so, yes.
And so Mr. or Mrs. A24 will be able to go, all right, I like that one. That's got a Paul Dano in it. So therefore, that is something that's going to cost me $5 million. This one over here has got a Zac Efron in it, so that's going to cost me $15 million, but it's going to make me a lot more money because it's got a Zac Efron in it.
Okay.
algorithm. Can't argue with it. Shall we talk about something else that's been rumored this week?
Well,
sure.
Are we going to talk about the Daredevil shaped thing in the room? Is that what we're talking
about?
Exactly.
Okay,
yeah. So fine. So Daredevil, Born Again, is going back to the drawing board. They are retooling it. My understanding is that this had been conceived as a kind of almost like a legal procedural, and that he didn't appear in his costume until like the fourth episode. And by all accounts, it was not working. So it's going back to the drawing board, I think, completely. I think they're still going to keep bits of it, but they're going to, I think, rethink what this show is. But more importantly, more importantly, this has kind of apparently called into question how Marvel creates shows as a whole. I mean, as we know, they've kind of eschewed the traditional model of having showrunners and having, you know, creative boots on the ground doing things, you know, which I think we can agree that She-Hulk kind of benefited from. But the idea that they'll just like shoot everything and then fix it in post, which seems to have been their tactic here, and has worked
sometimes
more often than not on the big screen, not always, but I feel like certainly in a TV format with the greater running time and the multiple episodes, I think having that
and the smaller budgets and the
smaller
more pressurized
budgets,
timeline
it isn't always working.
And
so,
also, quite frankly, adapting to a TV format, because they went in initially, I think, with the exception of a couple of shows, WandaVision. And listen, this is not to say, I think a lot of the MCU TV shows are really good. I think there's only been two not great ones: Falcon and the Winter Soldier, and Secret Invasion, which is by some considerable distance.
But not
Marvel
the
series.
Least watched of all of them, which is Ms. Marvel, which has surprised me.
Well, that's because of the racism.
That's because of the racism
and
the sexism. This was, I mean, look, I think the thinking behind this piece, this was a Hollywood Reporter, quite deeply reported piece by the looks of it. And I think the thinking behind it is more that this is them getting on top of the issues rather than actually, you know, digging down and doubling down on these problems. So hopefully this will... I do feel like the bad reviews for Secret Invasion from us, among others, probably did shake them up a bit, because, you know, that show, we kept seeing loads of potential in it. We, you know, we have this incredible cast. You have a pretty solid idea for the show. You had some really good concepts behind it, and then it just did not come together at any point, and it didn't have any flow to it, and it didn't have any... coherence, really. And I think that's what became apparent as the weeks went on, because I think, you know, it's always Christmas Eve, we always go in thinking, oh, well, they can still bring this together, they can still make next week, if next week is good, this could really work. And it's sometimes only when you've seen the whole show that you realize, oh no, it really didn't come together. But that's the point, that's us as consumers, that's not them making the show. Them making the show, they're supposed to have a plan when they go into
and they often don't. And I think,
and that's what's weird about this, and I think this is what hopefully they're correcting now.
The ones that have worked best are obviously the ones that happened. So WandaVision, which was kind of precision tooled, Loki, which was well put together, She-Hulk slightly different because it actually did have a, you know, a creative voice behind it. But just so many of them, so many of these, even like things like Moon Knight, even Ms. Marvel, do feel like, what were they doing with this? Because they both of those shows kind of get lost towards the end, right? They don't know where they're going.
They start off so
strong.
They start
good.
Really strongly and then just completely lose direction because presumably they didn't have the material to achieve what it is they wanted to achieve, and it just kind of peters out. But
the Hollywood Reporter piece was very, as Helen said, very well researched, and you know, it made a number of claims. And one of the claims it made was that Secret Invasion, for example, as we had suspected, if you go back and listen to our spoiler specials, if you are a spoiler special subscriber, you can go back and listen to the abject horror that unfolds every week. But we said pretty much in every single episode that we feel that some major, major surgery has gone on here. And that Kyle Bradstreet, who was a showrunner, but Marvel at that time subscribed to the pre-strike letter of the law, if you will, and they almost tried to get around the idea of having showrunners by having head writers on their shows, and then they would have lead directors as well. And sometimes, like on a WandaVision, where you have a Matt Shakman who works brilliantly hand-in-hand with the head writer, Jack Schaefer, you know, they had a very, very, seemed to be a very, very good relationship. Loki did well as well, and it had a head writer in Michael Waldron and a lead director in Kate Herron.
Yeah,
and sometimes that really, really works. And then sometimes you get a sense that that maybe the head writer hasn't necessarily, how should we say, made it to the finishing line, and that there's a too many cooks spoiling the broth situation going on with some of the shows. And you felt that with Moon Knight. Yeah, so yeah. Jeremy Slater, who was the head writer on that show, wasn't available for interviews afterwards, which usually sets a few alarm bells ringing, to be honest. But The Hollywood Reporter says that Jeremy Slater left the show. So, and the same thing happened with Secret Invasion. We started off with Kyle Bradstreet as the head writer slash creator, and then halfway through, Brian Tucker comes on, and, you know, we've heard all the rumors about how they reshot huge loads of it at great expense.
But the thing about this, that like, it feels like a moment of awareness that they've come to this realization. But when you watch She-Hulk, you kind of, that show made you think, oh, they know what the problem is, because that show dramatized the issues that these shows have been having. Yeah. And then they went on to make Secret Invasion, which was worse, a worse offender than all of these
things.
I mean,
it was already in train.
But equally, like, they did release it as it was.
Yeah. Problem with Secret Invasion was they've already put $100 million into it, yeah, and then another $100 million, presumably, for the reshoots. And they're not going to scrap that completely, so they have to make the best of it. But their approach to TV was very much to go, we have a formula, we have a system, and we're going to apply it to TV. And yes, it's TV, but we're not going to treat it like TV, we're going to treat it like movies. And that works for a large part, but then sometimes it doesn't. And what it means is that they will have executives on these and head writers on these and lead directors on these who are not necessarily used to telling episodic stories. And then it begins to crumble. It begins to fall apart a little bit. And again, going back to Ms. Marvel, again, a show we really, really enjoyed. But towards the end of that show, we were like, was that episode meant to finish in that way? Because it felt like it just ends.
Yes.
I wonder how much of this, and some of this retooling, look, I think it's all a good thing, and I think you need to, fair play to them for recognizing that something's not working and doing something about it, because that's what you need to do, and a lot of places don't. I also think this may be partly a response to the writer's strike and to the unionization of their VFX workers, but I think they, you know, you cannot do this kind of brinksmanship with writers now, and you cannot do it with VFX teams either. And I think the writers' union demand, the WGA demands, is probably a really good thing that is actually going to save them a whole lot of money in the long run. If they have to have proper showrunners, they have to have a proper writing team, they have to put that effort in early on before you've started spending hundreds of millions on sets and VFX and costumes and all the rest, ultimately, that will save you money. There's still, you can still build in a bit of room in the schedule to sharpen things and to plus things, but you can't leave everything till that last minute.
But it feels interesting, doesn't it? Because this Hollywood Reporter piece goes, you know, it was when they started looking at footage of Born Again that they thought it wasn't working. And Feige and his team thought it wasn't working. But the thing about Born Again, which kind of is nibbling away at me a little bit, is that apparently they looked at it and they went, hang on a second, he's not in his costume until episode 4. And it's like, well, hang on, wouldn't that have been apparent in the scripting and pitching stage?
Yeah.
Personally, I don't mind that.
No,
but
I don't.
But
bear in mind, like in the original Netflix series, bear in mind, he wasn't in his costume at all in the first season.
Mm. And rightly so, because it's a terrible costume.
Oh, it's even worse now.
I don't know, that black mask in the first scene that sort of, you know, like, Wesley from The Princess Bride.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
But the actual costume. Zorro.
But the actual costume, yeah, it was quite light.
Good.
Yeah.
Look, I think we have a lot to teach them. Look at our podcast, for example. You don't go into something unprepared and just ramble endlessly and hope that it turns out well. You know, this podcast is scripted, it's tight, it's economically done. It's not like we just turn up and make up the shit as we go along. There's a strategy at play, and I think we have a lot to teach the MCU.
We in no way spent half an hour discussing the names of carry-on films for an audience to whom we had to explain what a carry-on film was.
Good audio content.
This is great content.
Great content.
Good God.
Disney Plus's slogan, this is great content. Listen, we'll see what happens. Vincent D'Onofrio, who of course plays Wilson Fisk, aka the Kingpin, in Daredevil Born Again, tweeted, basically saying something like along the lines of, all the great projects I've been in have undergone some sort of...
Sure, but I think that there are degrees, right? I think things get tweaked slightly in post, but when you are essentially creating your product in post-production, that is not great, right? Like, it's not brilliant.
Yeah.
You know, there's something to be said for creating art with the materials you have at hand, but there's something more to be said for making sure you have the right materials before you get into the edit room. So
fix it in pre.
Yes, fix it in pre. That's the new thing.
There we go. Can we talk about cinema?
Sure. What about it specifically?
When I say cinema, what pops into your head?
Martin Scorsese.
No.
Oh.
James, don't say Taylor Swift. If I showed you like a Rorschach painting right now.
Why are you showing me all these different pictures of Taylor Swift? I'm very confused. There was a tweet actually I saw, I think it was this week, where someone said something along the lines of, did you see this?
Yes.
It was really bold for Alan Moore to have Rorschach's face be all of those naked women.
Yes.
No.
Was it?
Two guys fucking.
Okay.
It was a very, very, very good tweet. I enjoyed it.
That's funnier than my version.
Yeah.
That's why it went viral. Your tweet stuff.
That's why I'm not so good on Twitter. Yes.
Anyway, James, when I say cinema... you say...
Yes.
You say yes.
I say cinema. You say yes.
In a very unexcited tone of voice.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, you're both wrong.
I mean, I think I was right.
I say cinema. You say Costner. I say cinema. You say Costner.
Surely he's in Yellowstone.
Costner.
Yeah. Why are we saying Costner?
Kevin Costner.
Uh-huh.
Is saving cinema next year.
Is he?
The first two parts of his four-part Western series that he has, I mean, literally mortgaged himself up to the hilt for, to finance Horizon, an American saga.
Saga, it's about old people.
It's about old people, yes. It's
going on holiday.
That's exactly what it is. So Kevin Costner is writing, directing, and starring in this four movies, two of which he's already made, the third of which is ready to go once the SAG-AFTRA strike is resolved. And he has put pretty much every penny, all that Yellowstone cash that's come flooding his way over the last few years.
Fat stacks, like Taylor Swift.
Fat stacks of Benjamins, he's flicking them out everywhere. It's on these two movies. And if you know you're Kevin Costner, if you know your cinema, and I can see from your blank expression you don't, Kevin Costner directed a Western is reason to get excited. And both of these movies, parts one and two, are coming out within 2 months of each other next summer. And I just hope for his sake, it's about the Civil War.
Yeah.
I hope for his sake that they hit big, because nobody wants to see Kevin Costner working in a McDonald's.
Although that might be an interesting spin.
I've never seen Yellowstone, right?
I've watched the first one.
I've seen some
except episodes.
And I've watched all of 1883, the prequel.
Is that because you thought it was a 1980?
Yes, I thought it was 1989. I thought it was 1883, yeah. Taylor's version.
Yes. So I've only seen one episode of Yellowstone. And it was whenever I was back in Northern Ireland for a week or so in the summer. And my niece, Alex, was like just binging it on Paramount Plus. And I came in to watch an episode in which, and I thought, I just thought that Yellowstone was a nice, genteel, like kind of Dallas with horses.
It's Republican Succession.
Well, I don't wish to comment on its politics, but because I don't know enough about it. But I walked in this episode to witness lots of swearing.
Yes,
lots of swearing, a little bit of sex, a little bit more rumpy pumpy than I was used to, and quite frankly, I had to leave the room.
Right?
Did someone's bra come off with a boing
boing? Carry on up the frontier. But I watched a sequence in which one character kills another character by throwing a rattlesnake in their face.
There's a snake in my face.
And then someone poisoned the water hole.
That is actually the plot of pretty much the first episode of Yellowstone.
But genuinely, have you seen this episode?
Of the one where someone throws a snake in their face.
I don't want to say the characters because it'll give away. Like, it was a major character killing another major character. And I watched this character open a box and then just pick up a rattlesnake. And the guy's like, what are you doing? And he throws a rattlesnake at him and it bites him on the face. Like, he throws a fucking rattlesnake at him.
That's fucking hardcore.
You don't see that on Last of the Summer Wine.
Well, because, you know, they only had like adders.
Yeah.
Anyway, he's making films. Best of luck. Yeah, I mean, you know.
And the trailer for the first one came out, all it evolves at the moment is because it's like a big, you know, Kevin Costner is here to save cinema.
Well, certainly Westerns. Anyway.
Yeah, and it's basically him on a horse, and he turns around and he fires a gun. It's like, fucking get in. Come on. Yes. I say cinema. You say Costner. I say cinema. You say
Scorsese.
No. Fucking hell. Should we have guessed?
Let's do it.
Please, God. Is it Kevin Costner?
It is Kevin
Costner. Is it a rattlesnake?
He has been on the podcast, Kevin Costner.
Yeah.
What for?
Dreadful film. Shocking film. I don't wish to talk about it. Anyway, we have just one guest this week, but luckily What a guest it is. It is Randall Park.
Hey.
AKA Agent Jimmy Woo from the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And of course, the likes of Aquaman and of course, the sitcom Fresh Off the Boat and many, many other wonderful things. But now he is the writer and director of Shortcomings, which is based on a graphic novel and is a very, very low-key, very well-observed, very well-acted comedy drama about an Asian-American man who is undergoing some travails in his life, shall we say. This film was playing at the London Film Festival, and actually I spoke to Randall Park about the London Film Festival and also Michael Winterbottom, the great director Michael Winterbottom, about their LFF experiences and their film festival experiences, because Randall Park's never been to the LFF. And that's part of our London Film Festival special podcast, which is available right now and also features me and some other members of the Empire team talking about the LFF as well. Anyway, Randall Park and I also spoke about Shortcomings. So here we are, talking about that, about his career and how long it has taken him to grind away and create a career in Hollywood over the years. I had a lot of fun doing this. Hope you will too. Enjoy. We are delighted to be joined on the Empire Podcast by the director of Shortcomings, Mr. Randall Park. How are you, sir?
Very good. Thank you for having me, Chris.
No, it's a pleasure. It's a pleasure. We've just done a chat just to pull the curtain back. We've just done 10 minutes or so about the London Film Festival as well. And during that conversation, you were talking about how Shortcomings is an independent movie and is a passion project. And, you know, these are not the sort of films that studios throw money at necessarily. But can you talk me through the journey, this odyssey of getting this film made?
Yeah, Shortcomings is based on a graphic novel that came back in 2007. And I remember reading that graphic novel back then when it came out and just being so blown away by how real it felt. It very much reflected my life at that time and the lives of my friends and the things that we were going through, the things that we were talking about. And the graphic novel was very intimate in that way. And I just remember feeling just very blown away and thinking, wow, this would make a great movie. But at the time, I was in no position to get anything made. I was fairly new to my acting journey and very much struggling. So there was no chance of anything happening with that. But the story did stay on my mind all those years. And over the years, as I kind of slowly built a career, I wondered what's going on with Shortcomings. I wonder, you know, if anybody's doing anything with it. And 15 years later, found out that there was a script. It was written by Adrian Tomina, who wrote the graphic novel, and the script was wonderful. Somehow I got attached as a director and for my feature debut. And there's more to the story, but
I'm it's sensing just, it is, yeah.
I said, I'd like to direct that. And they said, sure. I had directed some TV at that point and had done some shorts and web stuff. And it felt like I was looking for something to do as a feature, a directorial debut, and this project was there. And again, was something that I was very passionate about and felt very it felt like very much a part of me because of how much it resonated with me in terms of how real it felt and how authentic it felt. And so that was kind of the North Star for me going into it, was okay, let's capture that same feeling I had when I read the graphic novel back in 2007, that feeling of how real it is and authentic it is.
In terms of attaching yourself, how did you go about doing that? Who did you have to pitch to, and how did you pitch to them? Were you know, because this is a graphic novel already, so did you have a mood board that was inspired by the graphic novel, or did you have another way in visually?
Graphic novel had been acquired by a company called Roadside Attractions, and they were trying to figure out what to do with it. There was talk of maybe it being a TV show, maybe a movie. It was kind of loosely acquired, but then Adrian had written the script, this feature version of it, And they were meeting with directors and creatives to kind of help develop this thing. That's when I read the script and thought, oh my gosh, this script is amazing. It's beautiful. Just like the graphic novel. And so I pitched myself to Roadside and then to Adrian. And in during that pitch, I had a whole, essentially a present, this presentation where I talked about how familiar I was with the actual graphic novel, how much the story resonated with me, just the personal connection to it, on top of the way in which I wanted to shoot it as a movie. And during that pitch process, it kind of solidified the idea that, okay, we're going to make this movie. And at that point, they brought me on, and we, Adrian and I, just started to develop the script further. And at this point, you know, we my production company was on it along with Roadside, and we were just developing it to in the hopes of obtaining financing for it. And so for a couple of years we worked on that script, and then we seeked financing, and we went everywhere, independent financiers. We did go to the streamers and the searchlights of the world, and eventually a company called Topic, who finances a lot of great independent films, came on board, and another company called Tango. Topic and Tango together, they financed the film, and once we obtained financing, it was kind of a mad dash to get it made, because we had a window based on my own schedule as an actor. I had some work that was coming, and I wanted to make the Sundance deadline. So we had a window and a few months to get an edit in after production, and it was just kind of right from there on out. It was just work. We just put our head down and just started working hard, and it all came together, and then we submitted a cut to Sundance, not too long after found out we got in.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So you mentioned there that when you first read the graphic novel, that you kind of recognized some of the characters, you recognized some of the world. And I've read other interviews with you where you've said that you knew people like Ben, who is the lead character, who is, you know, this really interesting character. He is someone who's kind of, in a sort of holier-than-thou stupor, he's kind of sleepwalking his way through life a little bit.
You know, there was a lot of discussion about Ben early on and throughout, and to this day, about you know, the quote unquote likability of the character or unlikability of the character, and so that was something that we were very mindful of throughout. But you know, by nature, from on the script and in the graphic novel, you know, the character is a bit of a misanthrope and highly opinionated, very judgmental, very quick to anger. But to me, he was never unlikable, you know, and maybe because I saw bits of myself in the character, but I also saw, you know, again, like you say, a lot of friends of mine, like that, he was very familiar to me, and I knew that there were sides of this character that were relatable. And that relatability came in the vulnerability of the character, the sadness of the character, the things that he's experienced that turned him into this person. But also on top of that, Ben is extremely charming. He's very funny and very much a loyal friend to Alice. who and that's the relationship, that's kind of the central relationship throughout the film, this friendship.
But
because Ben was such a complicated character, a lot of thought went into the casting of Ben. Well, who can we find that can convey all the things on paper, you know, about him, but also the things going on underneath, that vulnerability and that heartache underneath, on top of being very charming and funny. And we found Justin H. Min, who was remarkable. Yeah. Yeah. With a very tough job to do, but he just put so much thought and care into the character, and it showed.
You've mentioned a couple of times at the start of your acting journey, and you know, 2007. And so while we've been talking, I've been looking at the IMDb at some of the roles you were playing in and around 2007 and 2008. And, you know, you're in a lot of shorts, you're in a lot of TV shows, showing up for a couple of episodes here and there. You know, the character names, you're playing characters like ER Doctor in The Bold, the Beautiful. Do you remember that?
Yes, of course. that was a daytime soap opera, one of the classics here in the States. I was an ER doctor. I just spewed medical jargon for, I don't know, 20 seconds, and then I was out. And I think they called me back. Second episode, and I was like, oh my gosh, they're gonna build upon my character. And I came back for the next episode, and I got 21 seconds of medical jargon, and then I was out. So it was quite scary for me at the time.
Oh my god, then you were killed off in a tragic lift accident immediately after that. But you're playing a lot of, you know, there's a FBI agent credit in a, which is strangely prescient, in a short you made in 2007. You're in an episode of Cold Case. The point is, right. I mean, you've talked about this as well in the past, that Hollywood has not been necessarily disposed towards Korean American actors, you know, Asian American actors over the years. So how did you go about building your career?
I mean, really, it was just like one brick at a time, you know, like just slowly building, you know, not saying no early on, just kind of any opportunity, any opportunity to act.
Yeah,
was worth it for me, because I felt like the reps, just having the reps would be beneficial for me. So early on, I was kind of doing anything and everything, including student films and commercials, and I was doing theater and sketch comedy eventually making my own videos and web series and short films, and really for me it was about getting those reps in, and just slowly over time would kind of level up, you know, going from ER doctor to, oh, this character has a name, you know, it's just the first name, but you know, oh, this character has a first and a last name. Suddenly I, you know, I'm recurring on a show, before, and then eventually, oh, I booked a pilot, you know, TV pilot as a regular. Maybe this will get picked up to series. Oh, it didn't get picked up to series. I'll try again. You know, just kind of slowly over time, building and that's the typical route, I think, for a lot of actors who eventually find success. It's a 10-year plus process, you know, I'm thankful for it in retrospect, because I did get to work with so many people, different people, on so many different types of projects, and I got to be on so many sets, and glean a lot from those sets. And I think going back to the directing thing, that was extremely beneficial for me to see different directing styles from various perspectives as an actor, from, you know, background to being literally in the background to having a few lines to being a regular on a show, or it was a great learning opportunity on top of, you know, just a slow career build.
Because you can take something from everybody, right? You can take something from a director you work with for 6 months. And you can take something with the directors you work with on The Bold and The Beautiful.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So much of these experiences too, I mean, the vibe on the set, like that's something like anyone can feel immediately. And a lot of that I'd come to learn comes from the director, you know, the feeling on the set, the freedom on the set, for actors. So all of those were opportunities to learn.
Randall, I've got to let you go. But I just want to ask, real quick about the future for you. Now, obviously you are director in this film. You're still on strike, as part of the SAG-AFTRA strike, which we hope will be resolved soon. But has that meant that you've been able to pivot and start developing something else to direct?
Yeah. Well, the WGA strike has been resolved. Yeah. So as soon as that happened, I was able to start writing and working on different projects, and then in the writing capacity through my production company, just start talking. You know, we've just been able to start talking about projects and trying to figure out the next one for me, you know, to direct. And we don't have one yet. But, you know, the one thing I learned from this entire process is, for me, I have to be very passionate about whatever it is I'm directing, because it is such an all-encompassing, challenging a job that that passion is key. So whatever it is, I find it'll be something that I really love, just like Shortcomings was for me.
Well, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. I'm glad you go, Randall Park. Thanks so much indeed.
Thank you, Chris. Good talking to you, man.
Okay, so that was Randall Park. Shall we talk about Shortcomings? Mm. We start the review section with Shortcomings. We've got quite a few films to get through this week.
We do, yeah.
James hasn't seen the Eras tour yet, by the way.
None of us have. It hasn't really screened.
Crucially, yes. So, A, it hasn't screened for press. It's obviously screened as we record in the US. There was a premiere for it, so they've had early screenings of that. Yes.
And it's a concert film. What's it going to be? Yeah. Oh, the plot was disappointing.
Yeah,
whatever.
Oh no, didn't like the third act twist. We're seeing it on Friday night, because there are no daytime screenings of this film to the public. So we are sending our own Ian Freer, who is not a Swiftie, down.
He's a Slowie.
He's going to sit with all the Swifties and sing along and have a good old giggle on Friday night. And he will be filing his review, which will be up on the site on Saturday morning, where it will be 5 stars.
When are you going to see it?
I'm not going to see it.
We've talked about this, crucially,
I am not going to see it. As I've said before, I'm not going to see it. I'm going to see the Eras Tour live in the flesh next year, so I'm 100% not going to spoil it by watching it in the cinema.
Where are you going to see it?
At the big like thing with the big concert venue stadium thing. Wembley Stadium, that's the one. Sorry, I don't go out a lot. Wembley Stadium. I'm going to Wembley Stadium in the summer, and I'm going to see it then.
Hell's Bells, are you going to see?
I didn't buy tickets, no. I like her. I'm sure she's great, but I didn't.
It's going to be
spend hundreds of pounds.
Magnificent.
Obviously, Helen and I are considered to be podfluencers, which is people who have a certain pool,
people
who have a certain cachet.
Indeed.
with the younger generation. So yeah, when it comes time, all Helen and I have to do is just slide into Tay Tay's DMs and just click our fingers, and we will be having VIP box tickets.
Absolutely,
baby.
Yeah.
That's what's going to happen. So I'll see you then.
Yeah, sure.
That'll be great. Looking forward to it.
Who's
that man being escorted away by security?
Genuinely, what's interesting about this though is, so it's a sub 3 hour concert film. Bearing in mind that the Eras Tour is about 3 hours 20 minutes, I think, in total. So they have cut a number of songs to keep it under 3 hours.
They have held things back for you, James.
They have. So, like, The Cardigan isn't on there. Some of the other, sort of The Archer isn't on there. So, you know, so there are quite a few tracks and didn't make this version of it. But I think this is all because I think when this inevitably lands on Disney Plus, wherever it ends up, that's when we'll get the full because this was recorded over three nights when it was during the LA leg of the Eras Tour. And I think we'll get the full version at some point. So Haim supported her there. So Nobody, No Crime, which he played with Haim, that isn't on the theatrical version of this as well. But I think it will all appear on the streaming version.
So she's doing 3 hours, 20 minutes a night.
Yeah.
Every night.
Yeah.
That's wild.
I know.
Really?
It's
genuinely
insane.
That's what she's doing.
Yeah.
And also, she's got support.
Crucially, well, in the UK, it's Paramore, but it's been different people in different places. But crucially, like this, it's not like, you know, you and I, Chris, when we used to gig out together, like I said before, it's not the one gig that we went to. Yes, we gig out because we're hip and cool and down with the kids. You know, it's not her just playing. It's like a whole production. It's like a great big show with stuff happening and things. So, yeah.
I do, because
I've been on Taylor Talk on TikTok and I've seen lots and lots of, there's a bit where she jumps into a pool, except it's not a pool, it's a trolley, and goes under the stage and then comes up in a new outfit. It's amazing. So yeah, lots of stuff happening there. And there's a house, there's a whole cottage bit, which is very exciting.
I'm so tickled by your devotion to Taylor Swift.
Anyway, we were going to talk about Shortcomings, weren't we?
But this is the film of the week, Helen.
But you're right, because we haven't seen it.
We haven't seen it, although it is the film of the week. And we gave the Taylor Swift Eras Tour 5 stars.
In James's five head, stars, except not because he refuses to see it.
5 stars for Eras, which we'll see. Wow. But Shortcomings.
Okay, so this is the story of Ben, played by Justin H. Min, who people may remember from After Yang. If you saw After Yang,
yeah,
which those of us who did will remember, but everyone else won't because nobody saw it.
Hiya, gorgeous.
Anyway, he plays Ben, who is a cinema manager in the Bay Area. His girlfriend is Miko, who's played by Ali Mackey, is this cool film festival programmer. She's kind of getting into the art scene as well. She crucially has a trust fund, which is how they're able to live in this amazing apartment in the Bay Area, because you better believe I had questions about that, which distracted me from the first half of the film. And it's kind of just a sort of hangout movie. So these two are, you know, pretty young, sort of mid to late 20s, I guess, trying to figure life out. He, you know, quit college to try and become a filmmaker, swiftly realized he didn't have maybe what it takes. Please calm down, James, please. You're not even seeing
I need to calm
film.
Down. I'm being too loud.
It's you. You're the problem. It's you, okay? Anyway, so he's kind of a bit rootless. And more to the point, he's really negative about everything. So there's a very fun, quite starry little scene at the beginning of the movie, which is clearly riffing on a recent, let us say, Asian-led success at Blockbuster. And his reaction to that is to be as down on it as he is on everything else. And Miko is clearly getting a bit over this and having problems with this. So their relationship is a little bit on the rocks. And then it's kind of just a hangout. You know, she goes away for work for a few months. He's hanging out with his best friend, Alice, played by Sherry Cola. He's kind of, you know, attracted maybe to other women and wondering maybe if he wants to do something about that while they're kind of on a break. Exactly. But mostly it's just kind of hanging out, figuring out life, talking about what's right, what's wrong. You know, it's based on a graphic novel by Adrian Tamin, who also writes the script. Apologies if I pronounce his name wrong. I don't know if it's Tamin or Tamine. But it's a really well-drawn characters, a really funny, dry, wry kind of a script. And occasionally, you know, famous people will kind of pop up in interesting ways and odd things will happen. And I had a great time. I wasn't really expecting much of this, not because I don't like Randall Park or anything like that. I hadn't heard a lot about it. But having read up on it since, you know, it got a good reception at Sundance earlier this year and undeservedly so. It feels like that kind of classic American indie kind of hangout movie, right? Oddball characters just being interesting together.
And Sherry Cola being fabulous, as always.
As always.
It's interesting because Min's character, Ben, is a total dick. Like, he's just a dick. He's an insufferable dick. And that could very easily have been a barrier. I certainly bumped on it. The first 10, 15 minutes of this, I was like, oh, I'm not going to get on with this because he's such a penis. But that's obviously the point of the film. And I think what makes that character work so well is even though he is a colossal bellend, he's so real. He's such an authentically drawn character that you immediately just see yourself in him, perhaps. But you see the reality in him. Like, I think the authenticity of the character resonates with you, that you can see that he's a very, very flawed person with absolutely no self-awareness. And you see, and obviously he comes to more of a revelation about this as the film goes on, but his dickishness is part of the entertainment. But he just walks that dickish line.
Yeah, really well.
With only just one toe over the edge. Like, it's very, very precisely done. And I think it works very well because Sherry Cutler's character, Alice, she is his best friend and she's lovely and she knows he's a dick, but she loves him anyway. And I think to a certain extent, you try and see his character through her eyes and that helps a lot as well. Ali Mackie's character, Miko, I mean, God love her, like she has the patience of a saint. But yeah, it's really, really good. And the dialogue is spot on. It's sparky. There's lots of really great banter in it. It's genuinely laugh out loud funny.
It's a very good Spider-Man joke.
Oh my God, isn't there just?
No spoilers. But
no spoilers for who makes it, but it's very funny. Loads of good stuff. Really enjoyed this. Made me laugh a lot. And I thought it was quite touching. And again, like I said, I think it has a real sort of... if I were a wanky film critic, I'd say verisimilitude, but I would just simply say it has a realism to it, like it feels relatable and real.
Yes, I agree with everything you said, which means that there's no reason for me to say anything else. So 4 stars then for Shortcomings, which is available now on digital, but I think it might also be in certain screens around the country this weekend if you want to go and check it out. Also in certain screens around the country is Blackberry, which came out last week, but we hadn't seen it. Matt Johnson's Blackberry, which is the tale of James...
Yes, this is the tale of the BlackBerry device. Now, for those of you who are youthful and are going, what the hell is a BlackBerry? That's a very, very good question. So BlackBerry's cornered up pretty much half the telephony market, sort of when you get back to the early noughties, sort of late 90s. And then now, as we are in 2023, no one has a BlackBerry. They just aren't a thing anymore, which is genuinely incredible. And this is the story of how they rose to prominence and then ultimately what their downfall was. Jay Baruchel plays Mike, the creator of the BlackBerry, a kind of tech genius with absolutely no salesman ability whatsoever. Very nervy, kind of, the whole thing begins when he's going in to do a presentation and it is an absolute car crash. And they enlist Glenn Howerton's Jim. And he is a ball-busting, alpha male, type A personality, grade A douche nozzle, and he comes in, but what he does is he bullies people into accepting BlackBerry. He sells BlackBerry, he gets them to stop BlackBerry, he pitches it to the networks, and they gradually pitch this idea, which at the time was revolutionary. It's a phone that sends emails. You can get emails on your phone. And I've been at Empire long enough that I remember asking for a BlackBerry from our company to see if they said no, but I wanted one because I wanted the idea. I wanted to send emails on my phone, and it's wild. And this is—it's got a little bit of social network in it. I guess it's got a little bit of dumb money in it as well. It sounds quite dry, and I think, you know, like certainly if you read the Wikipedia page for BlackBerry, it's really, really tedious. But they make it a lot of fun, and I think the dialogue, the script is really tight in this, and I think it's in on the joke that a lot of the people in these tech companies are these huge, loud, obnoxious, abusive bullies. And this film is aware of that, and it kind of pokes fun at that. And like, it feels very much that you're on the same side, that it knows exactly what it's saying about these people. Michael Ironside comes on later on as a kind of COO, who's again yelling at people nonstop. Matt Johnson's really good as Doug, who is Mike's best friend and kind of wears a headband, and he sort of pioneers movie night at the company. It's a really kind of nerdy Silicon Valley type, and they all kind of mess around and they kid around in the office because they love working on this product, and gradually it becomes more and more like a factory, literally to the point where he's forced to confront this hard-held belief he's had that all of these products should be made in the UK, and he doesn't want to farm them out to... What did I say? Oh, yeah. All these products should be made in the US, and he doesn't want to farm them out to factories in China where they may not... You know, where it's more mass-produced, where they're not going to take the care that he wants to take over them. But it's a really interesting story, not to mention a cautionary tale, and it's fascinating to see that something so dominant in a market like this, what happens when someone like Steve Jobs comes along and offers up something like the iPhone, which nowadays, given that we all have smartphones, when the iPhone launched, it was so revolutionary because it wasn't just a phone that does email. It was a phone that does the internet, that does email, that is an iPod, that does everything. Oh, and there's an app store, so you can put anything on it. Like, the very concept of that completely turned the mobile phone market on its head. And that's, I think, at the heart of this film. And it's fascinating.
It's also a really interesting... I think it's the human drama here that's really fascinating because, you know, you talk about Mike's reluctance to let anything be made in China, his determination on quality control and everything else. And the process of kind of, you know, whether he will ever give way on that becomes a sort of... It's almost like a fight for a corruption of his soul. And you do see a bit the other way as well. So this Jim character comes in, he's this hard-charging, like, ball buster. Also kind of, you know, you can feel the company culture kind of infecting him in the other direction at times a little bit. And so there's a really interesting kind of moral, ethical, character-based drama here, which I really enjoyed. And unlike the other, somebody called them biopics this week, B-U-Y, Topics, all these airs and Flamin' Hots and Beanie Baby, Beanie, whatever it was, and all the rest. This one isn't, because this isn't a triumphant story at all. It's more like the Beanie Baby Crash one in that respect. This isn't a story of triumph. This is a story of
hubris and
short-sightedness and just failing to see where the future was going, you know, even though these are people who are super bright and super plugged in. You know?
Also, to an extent, like, could anyone have? I think also it's the dropping the rock in the pond, which was Steve Jobs and Apple and the iPhone, which completely turned everything on its head. Yeah. And I remember all of this playing out. Like, I remember at the time, because they cover the bit where BlackBerry's whole network goes down. And that, I remember that being a massive deal when it happened, that everyone's BlackBerry's just stopped working for quite a period of time. It was absolutely wild. But but as Helen says, it's not just about, you know, little devices and nerdy stuff. There's really good human drama in here. It's actually really fun. And again, really good script as well.
Great performances also. I've seen Glenn Howerton, who is unrecognizable if for the fact that his face looks exactly like Glenn Howerton. But because Jim Balsillie is bald, you know, he's got this great bald cap on.
Yeah.
And he's great, but he is still essentially playing Dennis from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
But Jake Baruchel's
great, but
fantastic performance.
Jim Balsillie is untethered and his rage knows no bounds. It's not that big a leap, but I have seen people say that this could be a Best Supporting Actor nominatable performance, and I can see that.
Maybe.
I can see that. Anyway, 4 stars in for BlackBerry. No one's ever pronounced it like that before. BlackBerry.
BlackBerry, we don't need touch screens to see.
Do your email.
Now she has a new keyboard. Now she has QWERTY.
4 stars in for BlackBerry. What's next?
How about The Miracle Club?
How about it?
It needn't detain us for too long. It comes from director Thaddeus O'Sullivan, which is just a fantastic name.
That's a great name.
Cannot detain for the name anyway.
How Irish is that name?
It's pretty darn Irish. Now, this is set in a small Western Irish town, Ballygar, in the 1960s.
Real town or made up town?
I think it's a real town. I think it's a real town near Galway. Yeah,
Ballygar.
It's the story of there are these old friends, Eileen Dunn, played by Kathy Bates, and Lily Fox, played by Maggie Smith, and their younger friend Dolly, played by Agnes O'Casey, who are planning to go on the diocesan pilgrimage to Lourdes. Gosh, it brings me back.
Jesus.
Obviously, I didn't go, but I have family members who went 5 times on the diocesan pilgrimage to look after people. So if anybody, God help you if you don't know, thank the Lord that you don't. Lourdes is a place of pilgrimage for Catholics, and people turn up there every year hoping for cures or sort of, you know, emotional religious support for whatever traumas in their lives they're going through. And yes, many dioceses in Ireland will send a busload of people once a year of the sick and the elderly and just those in need of spiritual support to go to Lourdes and take the waters, basically. The Virgin Mary is supposed to have appeared there 170 years ago.
Part of her Eras tour.
Indeed. Basically, these three friends have won a competition. They've scraped together the money they need to go. Dolly, in particular, is very keen to go because her younger son isn't speaking. Eileen is worried that she has a lump and she wants to go to Lourdes rather than going to the doctor to get it checked out. And all is well. But then a friend of theirs, Mrs. Ahern, dies. And her daughter, Chrissy, played by Laura Linney, who has been absent for 40 years nearly since she left as a teenager under a cloud, comes back into town. She ends up accompanying them on this trip to Lourdes. And so it's all about, you know, getting back in touch with these people that she's known all her life but hasn't seen in an extraordinary length of time, and what's happened since, and what was the thing that made her go away, and why hasn't she been back, and blah, blah, blah. This is perfectly nice. It is very feel good. It is part of that sort of calendar girls, you know, old people on a trip kind of a feel to it. I will say that Kathy Bates's accent could have maybe done with not being like that.
I was going to ask about the accent, so I was, Helen. I'm very glad you brought up the accents in the film.
It's pretty, like, the West of Ireland is a pretty strong, pretty thick accent. I didn't think Kathy Bates's was great. I didn't think even Maggie Smith's was perfect.
Ooh,
I know. I apologize.
How dare you?
Just behead me for treason right now. Laura Linney, of course, basically does an American one and doesn't really bother about it.
Lazy.
But But apart from that, like, it's fine. But like, even a couple of days later, I'm sort of struggling to remember the details of what happened. It's like, it's very nicely done. Everybody's nice. The music sounds like it's from the Great British Bake Off, if I'm honest. It's that kind of, you know, light,
you had my attention,
cheery nonsense, you know.
Right. Yeah.
But it's just nice. It's nothing more than that. So,
right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Buff.
Does it have
a car chase? No.
Does it have a Thanos?
It really doesn't. Like, I cannot stress to you how much it doesn't have a Thanos.
Does it have a meteor that crashes and bestows fire meteorite crystals, mm-hmm, superpowers upon its characters?
I mean, they don't really go that into the origins of the cave at Lourdes where all this went down, but maybe in the grotto there are mystical crystals. I don't know that for sure.
All right. Well, the Miracle Club may not have that, but Paw Patrol, the mighty movie, sure as shit does. What did we give the Miracle Club? Who knows?
It's a miracle.
It's a miracle. Anyway, Paw Patrol, the mighty movie. I've seen this twice. I'm going to fucking talk about it.
Tell us about it, Chris. Is it rubble on the double? Is Chase on the case?
Is Chase on the case? Don't drop
what
Chase.
Is happening?
That's a great board game that we have, by the way, where you get a... Basically, Chase is on the
ice. Don't feel
Chase
you need to tell us about it.
One of the lead puppies in Paw Patrol, a television show aimed at 4 to 7 year olds, I would say, that makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. It's about a young boy named Ryder who somehow has the money and the wherewithal and the means to mount a gigantic, ginormous, expensive rescue service, which is dogged by talking puppies who never get older.
Are the puppies revealed with a boing?
They're not. Carry On Up the Adventure Bay is not what this movie is. Anyway, Don't Drop Chase is a board game. Chase is on the ice. You have to make the ice. The board game is it's made of blue bits of plastic.
Because I've played it at your house.
Well, yes, and it's great. And you have to take a little hammer and you have to knock out the pieces of ice.
Please stop.
And then if it gives way, Chase will die.
Yeah.
And it's about
I know it's a game where you try to kill Chase. I'm very aware of how it works.
Four kids.
Yeah.
Which ends with the hero
dying of hypothermia.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, tell us about the film.
Paw Patrol movie is the second Paw Patrol movie. And in this, an asteroid, a meteor, is drawn to Adventure City by the evil bad guy, voiced by Taraji P. Henson. And it has a crystals in it, which when the puppies of Paw Patrol use them, it gives them powers. So Sky, who is the main puppy in this one, which has caused some controversy amongst the Chase-loving faction. I have to say Chase
Good
was the
Lord.
Hero of the last Paw Patrol movie. But this time it's Sky.
Please, anyway, I'm begging
Sky
for death.
She's got the ability to fly, she's got super strength and so on, but it's all about how Sky is worried because she is the smallest puppy in the Paw Patrol and she's worried that she's too small and she's not going to be good enough to do her job, but don't worry, she gets killed very early on. No, don't worry, she is absolutely more than good enough to do her job. Anyway, so they have to then fight they have to get these powers and then fight the bad guy who's a mad scientist who claims she's not a mad scientist, but she teams up with the evil mayor of the city
who
wants to have the crystals for himself and his army of cats. This film, I've seen it twice now. I know I'm going to see it at least one more time because I insist on bringing a little drink of game to it because I fucking loved it. No, it's fine. It's fine. It's the production values are way better than Paw Patrol. It's a nice, tight 145 minutes long. No, it's 90 minutes long. The kids are going to love it. First time I saw it, there was a whole group of kids. And at the end, when a certain thing happened, a certain moment of heroism, they all burst into applause. And I was like, yeah, you should have been there when fucking Steve Rogers wheeled Mjolnir.
Yeah, baby.
Kids, famously good judges of quality.
I know. This is why Super Mario Brothers is the second biggest film of the year, right? Because, you know, all my, Super Mario Brothers, primary colors, nah. Like, no, get fucking taste. Costner.
Swift,
Costner, together at last. Release the bumhole cut. Anyway, it's fun for the kids. It's passable for the adults. It has this weird thing that a lot of American movies do where they revoice a lot of the characters in British. So
in British, famous language.
So the kid, and I think it's a kid, and I don't want to disparage or besmirch a child actor in any way, shape or form, but the kid who voices Ryder is the worst actor in the history of the world. You know, the Once More With Feeling was a saying designed for this kid. oh, there's a meteor over there. We should go and investigate it. It's as good as it gets. I fucking do another take, shall ye?
Well, but, maybe we blame the director then for not, you know, but getting them to the place.
Because yeah, blame the British director. But the Paw Patrol are all revoiced in British, but a lot of the American big name cameos are kept intact. So Kristen Bell is in at the beginning, Kim Kardashian's in at the beginning. They're kept intact. The one who's not kept intact is a news reporter character who in the American version is voiced by Lil Rel Howery and is a major, major character. And in this version is voiced by Sir Trevor McDonald. And it is not a character who is 80 something years old and is just one of the worst. Like, I love Trevor McDonald. He's amazing. He's a legend. Mm-hmm. We worship, we bow, we genuflect in your general direction, sir. But come on, come on. It's a character. It's a 30-something character, and he's got an 80-something-year-old man going, yes, that's right, let's go with it, kids, and it's like, fuck, no.
Are we still talking about the Paw Patrol meeting? Because no, it's been at least a week now, and...
Tell. Oh, I've got him. I'm going to get him on board. There's a Taylor Swift in it.
No, there isn't.
No, there isn't. 3 stars, like a generous 3 stars for adults, but for kids, a million stars!
Oh, God.
Yeah, okay, well... There's a reason we don't have kids doing our reviews, really, isn't there?
I think we have come to the natural end of this podcast.
I think we did in about minute two.
And I don't just mean this episode. I think probably the end of the podcast. Join us next week for more film-related fun when we'll be joined by... Well, you know, the new Scorsese film's out next week.
Woo, woo!
Killers of the Flower Moon.
Yes, I'm off to see it in a few short hours.
So naturally, we're going to be joined on the Empire podcast by... Errol Morris, director of the John le Carré documentary, The Pigeon Tunnel. But that's not all.
Uh-huh.
You didn't think we were going to let you down on the week that the new Martin Scorsese film comes out, did you?
Cinema.
Garth Davis, director of Foe, will also be on the Empire podcast. But anyway, hey, listen. If Martin Scorsese listens to this podcast, and if I know one thing for sure, it's that Martin Scorsese listens to this podcast, and you have 20 spare minutes over the next week or so, then just slide into my DMs. We don't have to talk about Marvel. I know he likes to bring it up in every interview.
Wow.
He's obsessed. But we don't have to talk about the MCU. We don't have to name every Stan Lee cameo Marty. It's totally fine. Then come on the podcast. This is it. I'm reduced to begging. I'm reduced to fucking begging Martin Scorsese to come on the podcast.
Maybe he'll come on and do one of the spoiler specials for like... Loki.
For the Wheel of Time.
Yeah, for the Wheel of Time. Which is actually, Helen and I recorded Wheel of Time spoiler special for Pilot Plus. Thank you, Chris.
I'm being benevolent.
You did, you were benevolent. Yeah, you teed that up. It may have been the nerdiest thing that's ever happened.
It may well have been. We were joined by the fancy author, C.L. Clarke.
And Helen's brother,
and
Nepo Baby
brother.
Colm.
Yeah. Look, nobody knows
what?
More about Wheel of Time than my brother.
It's true.
I'm not kidding. Brandon
the
Sanderson.
The O'Haras are multiplying on this
had
podcast.
Had he taken time away from his busy schedule of milking the cows and doing whatever it is they do in the field next door.
He lives in England, apart from anything else.
Oh, they don't have cows in England, Helen? I've seen English cows. They're all wearing cardigans.
Cardigan, a Taylor Swift song
Taylor
that does
Swift
not
fans.
Make
there we go.
The eras line up in the theatrical version, I'm sorry to say.
Oh, my God.
Please tell us we're done and let us go.
I'm going to keep you here.
Please don't talk about Paw Patrol.
You can never leave.
You can't leave. She won't let you leave because it's 3 hours and 20 minutes of pulsating Taylor Swift goodness.
Oh.
Anyway, until we meet again, until that auspicious occasion, until then, it is goodbye for my two colleagues of such lethal cunning. James Dyer, goodbye.
Goodbye.
Helen O'Hara, goodbye.
God help me.
And it's goodbye for me. I'm off to work my new screenplay. Carry on up the Empire Podcast subreddit.
Taylor's version.
Thanks for listening. See you next time. Bye. I wish there was a fucking 10-minute version of this podcast, I swear to Christ. Bye.